Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host around these parts. I'm super honored that you would take some time out today to be with us. We know you've got a lot going on in your life and in your ministry, and we're just honored that you would take some time out to plug us in your earbuds and listen to today's conversation. Today, we're honored to have the lead pastor of Athens Church, a fantastic church in Athens, Georgia. His name's Sean C. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ritz. I'm honored to be here.
No, I'm so glad to connect. Athens Church has been around since 2004, I believe, right? Is when you launched.
That's right.
Strategic partner of North Point Ministries. People may be familiar. This is a great church. If you're not following Sean and Athens Church, you really should be. Some great stuff going on here. A really great church. Sean, why don't you tell us about your church? Give us kind of the flavor. What would people experience? A bit of the story, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, Athens Church is 11 years old. Actually, started kind of gathering a team in the fall of 04, but had our first service January 05. The 5 years previous to that, I was on staff at North Point Community Church in Atlanta, and so we were kind of launched as a strategic partner of theirs. So you're going to get definitely a lot of North Point flavor, if you will. But one of the things that's unique is we're in a college town. Mm-hmm. And so that always brings some fun dynamics to our church. We absolutely love that. It's kind of the major university of our state. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, Athens Church is, man, it's young. It's alive. It's also got a really neat diversity. Athens is a fairly diverse town. And so be that racially, socioeconomically, age-wise, feel like we're, fairly representative of the town that we're in. But it's a really, really neat place. And yeah, I'm honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, this is, I've loved watching your story, you know, from afar. You know, a lot of good things have happened out here. Your church has been growing. You know, you've gone through kind of the We Love Athens, you know, campaign. You've ended up opening a building. You know, been a lot that's happened in the, 11 short years of your ministry. I'd love to kind of talk about your own kind of personal journey of leading in the midst of that. How have you kind of continued to remain healthy through that process? How have you led as a leader in the midst of so much growth and impact in your community?
Yeah, man. Well, I would love to tell you the story that I have remained healthy through this process, but that wouldn't be the true story.
Right.
The real true story would be, man, I grew up in Atlanta, and I grew up in a really dysfunctional home, a dad that really loves me, but just an unhealthy home setting, and got married at a really young age. Bonnie and I were 20 and 21 when we got married, still in college. And Anyway, Andy Stanley began as a mentor in my life at a young age in ministry. Went away to Dallas Seminary, and then again spent 5 years at North Point. And so I was very hungry and driven. And when I came into helping start Athens Church, I would love to tell you that I was more healthy than I was from an emotional vantage point. But I really wasn't. And it took me several years to figure that out. One thing about that's great about North Point is I learned about the concept of emotional intelligence and EQ from a professional vantage point, but it took me a while before that really took root from a personal vantage point.
Mm-hmm. What would you say some of those indicators that there were maybe some internal issues that you need to wrestle with? I think sometimes I know for me, I don't want to speak on behalf of the people that are listening. I know for me, I can convince myself that, hey, when things are going well in the ministry, when we're reaching people, good things are happening there, we're raising money, doing all that kind of stuff. It's like, no, everything's good. But a lot of times that's not the case for folks that are in ministry. What were some of those kind of early indicators in your own life where you're like, maybe everything's not where it should be?
Yeah. I agree completely with what you're saying. In terms of the church story, if you back up and zoom way out and don't look at all the details real close, things did go really, really well for the first you know, 10 or 11 years. It's been, God's given us an astounding amount of grace. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it, and it was really hard work, and I don't know that I could do it again. Mm-hmm. But I'm really glad that I got to be a part of it, that, you know, this first time around. But I would just say, internally, there was a growing sense that I was just more easily irritated than I want to be. I was, we have three children. My kids are now 15, 14, and 7. And I wasn't being as patient and gracious a father as I want to be. And I'm saying that in a super, like, politically correct way. I was way more of a jerk. I was way more angry. I was way more impatient and intolerant and judgmental and critical than I want to be. And I could sense some of this. I couldn't sense enough of it. And what I could sense, I was working on. I was in accountability. I was getting counseling. I was praying about it. I was trying. But for us, you know, I think part of your initial question was kind of what was the indicator. We had a defining moment as a family, Labor Day of 2012. And I had a pretty significant, what I'm going to call, explosion in my home, where I was just loud and screaming and you know, scaring the people in my home. And it was that day that Bonnie, my wife, just finally kind of threw up a flag and said, you know what, we just can't keep doing this like this.
Right.
And so I would love to say that I was just wise and mature enough to come to recognition that, hey, we had hit that point. The truth is I wasn't. I needed her. And then I had a mentor and some accountability partners in my life who she engaged then at that point. And it was a really, really, honestly, really painful time.
What were those first steps? So, you know, I think, you know, you came to, you know, somewhat realization, obviously love Bonnie dearly. She's waving a pretty significant flag saying, hey, this needs to change. What were some of those early steps you took?
Well, I'll say, even backing up just a little bit before that, by the grace of God, because of the culture that I've been in, things like accountability were significant. So those relationships were in place. Things like having a mentor couple who we respect and look up to were in place. Things like having a counselor were in place. And I say that because a lot of times people that I know that kind of run into a wall, they don't have any of those support systems in place. And so the first thing Bonnie was able to do was reach out to those support systems, and which for me was terribly humiliating. You know, I again, from the outside looking in, I'm healthy. I got a great marriage. I got three kids. I got a church that's growing. You know, I'm kind of doing as well as I could possibly do. But then, you know, as you got more closely associated to what was going on inside, there was a lot more pain there. And so, yeah, so she reached out to those folks, and we began a series of really, really intense conversations.
You know, I've heard it said that leaders need a circle of people around them that love them but aren't impressed with them. And I think that's really true. You know, I think there are times, particularly when you find yourself in the lead role in an organization, you know, you need people in your life. And, you know, that's a call to people who are listening in today to really examine before you get to the, you know, the place where, you know, you found yourself, Sean, to say, do I have those people that could come and help in, you know, amidst of a situation like that? So kind of where did life go from there? What was kind of some next steps? How did this impact? What were some of the changes that you made, you know, in your own professional life, at the church? What, you know, what ended up happening kind of to help you get back to a better place?
Yeah. Well, man, I wish I could tell you this really polished, you know, story of how well I executed all of this, but that wouldn't be the accurate story. And I know, just for the sake of the folks that are tracking, they're living in real life and they're living in real ministry. And so I want them to know the real story. And so that really led into about a year of what I'm just going to call really intense conversations. And for me, I think I was real defensive at first. I felt misunderstood. I felt like Bonnie wasn't seeing things accurately. And so I was trying to kind of present my case, if you will. And I think the voices in my life just continued to say, Sean, there's probably more truth in what Bonnie is communicating than you're completely aware of. And so it just took a long time. I mean, there was a period of time in that first year where Bonnie started individual counseling right away. And there's a lot of different forms of counseling, but I'm going to say this was pretty in-depth, very Christ-centered counseling that we needed at the time. And it was counselors aren't all the same. And this was pretty in-depth work. And then I had a counselor, and then we had a counselor. So there was a time there were three different counselors actively in our lives trying to help us navigate this. So that took about a year. And then about a year into that, my mentor – and one thing that I didn't comment is probably, I don't know, 6-7 months into it, we actually got the elders of our church involved. And that was at the recommendation of my mentor. And I think ultimately my mentor doesn't live in the same town that I do. And I think he really wanted someone who was going to have some close touch. Even my accountability partners, we do it more like this, more electronically. And so we get together a couple times a year, but we don't live in the same towns. And so the elders got involved. And then about a year into it, my mentor recommended to the elders that I take some time off.
Okay.
And just sensed that it would be good for me and that I really needed it. And I will say by that time, I was now about 14 years into ministry without any sort of substantial break. We have kids and we are able to go on a vacation from time to time, but anybody with young kids knows that kids with vacation is not really
it's not really downtime.
No, it is. It is more stress. You know, at a different location. Fun memories, fun pictures. But when that idea came on the table, honestly, I was so grateful for it because I was just worn out. Now, what's interesting is in the North Point culture, there's nothing written in or built in about any sort of sabbatical process. I know that's a part of a lot of people's traditions.
Right.
It's not part of ours. And so this was something that was really new. This was not something that people were doing on a regular basis. But I just knew that I was out of gas.
Right.
I knew that I needed help. And so in the end of 2013, the last 2.5 months of the year, I took off. And I can... love to talk to you about that time specifically, but I'll just pause and let you.
Let's dive into that. I think the idea of I think there are people that would love to take a sabbatical, but it's a little bit of what do I do with that time? How do I leverage that so that it's not just time sitting in front of the TV and just kind of I was off, but didn't really do the internal work that a break like that can do for you.
It's interesting that you say that because one of the biggest problems that I faced was I didn't know what to do. Nobody told me what to do.
Right.
I had some people in my life who were trying to tell me, hey, you need a little bit of this, you need a little bit of that, but nobody had a game plan for me. So I literally went to the elders and they didn't know that they had never done this before either.
Right. Right.
And so they just said, hey, put a plan together.
Right.
And so, man, I'll just say this in the grace of God, I'm literally online searching anything I can possibly find out. I'm searching for places to go. Like, I didn't know if I was going to go somewhere for 2 or 3 months. I didn't know. I didn't know.
Right.
And so I kind of piecemealed a plan together. And I will say, looking back, first of all, that season of ministry, was unquestionably the best ministry decision I've ever made. Taking that time off was bar none the best decision ever. So much so that just a week and a half ago, I had a conversation with our elders and said, I know we don't have a sabbatical policy built in, but we've got to figure out a system. Because, man, I'll just say this, Rich, to the folks that are listening. There's a lot of pressure that comes with what we do. And there's different kinds of pressure that if you work in typical working day world, everybody has pressure. I don't mean to imply that others don't. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I have a friend who just recently was involved in an affair. And these, you know, those are heartbreaking situations. And this guy most likely won't ever get his position back.
Right.
It's a different kind of pressure. It's a different deal. Yep. I hope his family recovers from this. But if he worked at AT&T and he happens here, it would be unfortunate. But the truth is, on Monday he'd go back to work, and you know he would continue. And there's just a different level of pressure that comes with this. So in light of that, man, I just I really, really want our people, and I want this for the folks that are listening, to find out how to sustain a healthy pace. So let me go back real quick. That was a bit of a diversion there, maybe.
Yeah,
but to the question of what I did kind of during the sabbatical, going back, it ended up being about 2.5 months. Essentially, the first month, I'm just going to call an unwind. And I literally would find a friend with a lake house and say, can I go there for a couple of days and escape? And then I'd find a friend with another place to go for a couple of days. We have a monastery in our area. I went there for 3 or 4 days and literally just essentially didn't speak. I'd never had any experience with that before. I took a trip with my dad. So it was just, but the one thing I did do is I didn't even think about Athens Church. I didn't attend services. I didn't go to small group. I didn't return emails. I mean, the place could have caught on fire and I wouldn't know. And I had to have that. For me, it had to be that level of separation. So literally my wife was going to small group without me. My wife was going to staff retreat without me. I was going to the Christmas party without me. I mean, that was just the nature of that. Then in the beginning of December, one of the things, just by the grace of God, I stumbled online and found was a 2-week counseling intensive with a gentleman named Michael Cusick, has a ministry called Restoring the Soul in Denver. And it was 3 hours a day for 2 weeks. And it was specifically designed for people in ministry. And I'm just going to tell you, man, God met me there in a way that I've never been met anywhere else. And I think I had to be prepared for all of that. And, you know, it was not a, not an easy, you know, not an easy thing to come to the kind of the end of myself, if you will, and, and to be ready for that. But that was a powerful, powerful turning point for me. And then I came back and kind of slowly reintegrated into life. But I'll say this, even when I came back, one of my conversations with the elders was, I'm a little afraid of going back to my normal schedule because it was so powerful for me, the time off. I was afraid jumping back, I was going to go back into 100 miles an hour. And that I was going to kind of lose traction of some of what had taken place. So I actually changed my schedule, and we're now talking, I don't know, 2+ years ago at that point. And essentially, I haven't changed it back.
What were some of those, you know, just high level, some of those kind of tweaks you made to your schedule, things you, you practically did to ensure that you didn't end up at, back in the same place?
Well, one of the main things is I'm a type A driven, perfectionistic kind of leader. I'm a doer. And so prior to this time, I left my house most days at 6:30 and I went and exercised and started my day at by usually a 7:30 breakfast meeting. And essentially I didn't, you know, stop until 5, and then, you know, occasionally there's things in the evening or whatever. For the most part, we're not an evening culture. But it was meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting and task to task to task to task. And I just noticed that nowhere in there was there really any space for me to refuel my heart. And so I was, I had a lot of withdrawals and very few deposits. And so essentially, my sons are now 9th and 8th grade. And we live just not that far from their school. I decided that, you know, in the spirit of Orange and Reggie Joyner and all those guys, that kind of marbles running out of the jar a number of weeks left with my kids, I decided I'm driving my kids to school from now on. That's just what.
Okay,
it's
cool.
10 minutes, but it's 10 minutes of me in the car with them. Hopefully, not hollering at them and all that. Building them up and letting them know that I love them and just little dad deposits mm-hmm. on the way out. And then once I drop them off at school, for the most part, for the first, really until about 11 a.m. most mm-hmm. days, I schedule no meetings.
Okay.
Now, there are right. occasional things that come in, and it's impossible to block, you know, everything out. Mm-hmm. But I just guard that time as mm-hmm. a time for me to invest in my heart, mm-hmm. To learn. Man, I've become, you know, lots of folks that I'm learning from during these days. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for me, I'm kind of doing 40 plus years of catch up on getting my heart back to a healthy place. Mm-hmm. And I just know that the number one thing that my church needs is a healthy me. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have a healthy me, then I'm not able to provide the leadership that I need to provide. And so I have noticed that as that's changed in me, it's ultimately changed the whole culture of our organization.
Oh, interesting. Of course, right? Speed yeah. of the leader, speed of the team, right? Things have trickled exactly. down. Have you on that front, have any kind of the, let's say, structural or staff dynamics changed at Athens? Like have you changed around some of the reporting or any of that stuff?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I simplified who was reporting to me.
Okay.
Yep. So essentially I just have our leadership team now that reports to me. So I've mm-hmm. got five teammates that I lead, mm-hmm. and I even changed my meeting schedule with them.
Okay.
I now have individual meetings with them only once a month.
Okay.
So I have we have kind of a core meeting on Monday afternoons, which mm-hmm. is the bulk of our team and the bulk of our kind of vision and decision making for a given week. And I lead that meeting, excuse me. But yeah, I meet with those guys once a month. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are times they would tell you that's not enough.
Right.
But one of the tensions that you got to face in leadership is there's only so much that you can give away, mm-hmm. and you gotta prioritize that and do the best you can. So now there's a number of meetings that I'm not a part of anymore. Mm-hmm. I just can't.
Right. Well, and the good thing about that is you are, you know, you're empowering your people, right? At the end of the day, you're saying, hey, I need you to pick up your piece of the puzzle here. And, you know, by not being in the room, by leading, but not being in the room, you know, that does, you know, hopefully create a, you know, a healthy culture for folks to take their, you know, piece of the puzzle forward. Anything else you'd like to share? This has been great. I've loved getting a sense of kind of, you know, what's happened and the process that you're in. I just appreciate your openness and vulnerability of, you know, sharing today, because I think there are times that I think it's easy just to try to push back and say, no, everything's great. And I really appreciate you kind of walking us through where things are at. But is there anything else you'd like to share before we transition into the rest of the episode?
Yeah, man. I think. Thank you for your encouragement, by the way. And I've actually gotten that fairly consistently at Athens Church. And one of the things that I've just said, and I want to encourage other leaders with this, is I've found that it's more difficult for me to be inauthentic than to be authentic. It's heavier to carry a weight of someone that I'm really not than of letting people see who I really am. Mm. And then I think the last thing that I would say is, you know, I could spend the next few hours telling you about the things God did in that intensive. But one of the things that Michael Cusick did for me was introduce me to Brené Brown, the author. Mm-hmm. And I've essentially read everything Brené's written. But man, if you just started anywhere, she wrote a book called The Gifts of Imperfection. Mm. And mm-hmm. It's absolutely incredible. And she's been a voice that has given me a new perspective on just my own heart and the way that I interact with people. That's given me a really, really helpful language. And so I've become a pretty major Brené fan.
This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round. That's the part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everybody that's on the show. Just honored today to have Sean C. with us from Athens Church. Fantastic leader, great church. It's been a great conversation today. Sean, what's an online resource you're using in your ministry that's particularly helping you these days?
Yeah, man. You know, I mean, just really simply from an organizational vantage point, I'm a big Evernote guy.
Yep.
I use Evernote just because obviously its ability to go across multiple platforms. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been something that's just a tool that's really, really helpful. But as I mentioned, I'm a huge Brené Brown fan. Mm-hmm. And so, man, her TED Talks, and she's actually producing some kind of courses right now that are really helpful. Mm-hmm. The Daring Way is the name of some of what she's offering right now. And so I'm finding that what she's offering to be really, really helpful also.
Very cool. What's a book you've read, I don't know, maybe in the past 6 months to a year, you've mentioned a few already, you know, that's impacting your thinking?
Oh my goodness, man. I've done so much reading in the last year or last couple of years. And as I mentioned, you know, Brené has been a really, really huge part of that. Mm-hmm. She's been really, really key. Emotionally Healthy Spirituality and Emotionally Healthy Church by Pete Scazzaro mm-hmm. have been just massive resources as well. And I'm about to read, my wife is in the middle of reading Ortberg's Soul Keeper, and I know it's of a similar vein. Mm-hmm. And man, really excited about turning to that next. I also read Levi Lusco's Through the Eyes of a Lion. Is that the name of it? About his daughter, Linya. And just facing difficulty in life and ministry. So anyway, sorry you asked for one.
No, that's great. No, that's good. That's really good. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive that's out there today, who would you want to get that with and why?
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit of a broken record, but man, I would do anything to spend time with Brené Brown. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just, number one, the way she carries herself is so relatable mm-hmm. and so authentic, and I think mm-hmm. she breaks down so many barriers. Mm-hmm. But Brené, because of her research, has developed a language around what I think many of us, most of us, the human soul is navigating mm-hmm. that I think is just new. Her concept of living in a wholehearted way mm-hmm. Is such a powerful idea. Mm-hmm. And so, man, just to get to spend some time with her and talk through that some more would be great.
Very cool. Well, I know, you know, today I'm sure you find a way to kind of kick back and relax. You've got a lot going on at the church, trying to balance that, and then also home life. What do you do just for fun? What do you do just to kind of kick back today when you're just trying to get some time, you know, just do something fun?
You know, it's funny, man. The older I get, I find myself wanting to sleep more. any sleep I can get is great. But I'm a big sports nut.
Right.
So this afternoon, I'll go watch my oldest son. His team play some basketball.
Nice.
And I actually even play some old men basketball where our goal is to sweat and not get injured.
So that's, yeah, don't keep, turn keep over on your low. Ankle.
That's right.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Sean. I really appreciate you being on the show today. I really appreciate that. You also did a series at Athens Church called Trending Toward Healthy that covered some of this you know, kind of content as well, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. And it kind of birthed out of, you know, the journey mm-hmm. that I've been on. And yeah, it was a 4-part series that we did mm-hmm. At the end of 2015. It's on our website at athenschurch.com. And
that's great.
A lot of fun.
We'll link to that too in the show notes where people can get a chance to see that. And if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that? The church website?
Yeah, athenschurch.com is definitely great. I'm on Twitter, just Sean C. Mm-hmm. Also, so that's an easy way to do it. Would love to help any way I can.
Great. Thanks so much, Sean. Appreciate being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.